It's 2 o'clock, and I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Story County Board of Health. Okay, so the first thing we need to do is we need to approval of the agenda. The agenda meets the people's approval?
Yep.
Okay. Right, do we need a motion for that? I forgot.
Yeah. So moved.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, very good. Now the minutes. Have everyone had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes.
Any changes or corrections in the minutes?
None.
Okay, so I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, and our minutes have been approved. Now, consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. And the first consent agenda is the meeting schedule. Okay, you guys got that calendar. Does that meet with everyone here?
Good.
And it's still the first Tuesday of every other month. Correct? Good. I figured that, but I wanted to make sure. And then the holiday schedule, that must have to do with any... Okay, sounds good. So, consent agenda is done. Okay, now, public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Is there anyone that wishes to speak to the Board of Health on an issue that's not on our meeting agenda? Nope. Okay. Can we move on? Okay. Discussion and consideration, Crestview Mobile Home Park, Margaret James.
Hey.
Good afternoon, Margaret.
Good afternoon.
Update on Crestview.
Update on Crestview. Oh, so I can see.
By the way, I like the pictures that you sent over.
The pictures.
Yeah, the pictures.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Full credit, Jerry Moore.
Okay.
Okay. He yeah, went
I
there.
I'm
so I just didn't feel like two of us needed to go there, so I said, you go. Okay. So what I have here are pictures that Jerry took on November 29th and November 30th. And so the funny part was that he went out there and everything looked pretty darn great. And then he went back out there the next day because the pictures were really dark. And I guess a few more mobile homes were moved back onto the site within that one day's time. So that being said, this is just a series of pictures.
Here instead. So I don't know if you're familiar with the park. So this is looking west, and that's Lincoln Way on the left-hand side there. So you can see, and that used to be just rife with trailers just and busy stuff and everything. So, wow, it's looking good. Look at that. Looking good. That's looking north, kind of around the corner there. He is storing trucks and things. That is not a problem with environmental health. That might be a problem with planning and development, and that is their value. Okay. Still some stuffola. That white trailer is his fence. It is not a trailer. I'm just saying. That's what. So he wants to keep his fence.
Just because you call it a fence doesn't make it a fence.
Well, it's not livable. I mean, he had them kind of nailed together and so that you couldn't see in that area where he would burn things. So I'm just.
I'm shooting the messenger here.
Thank you.
You can call it, you'll call it Coliseum, but it's still not a fence.
Okay. This is the sewage lagoon. That north half was pretty much filled in, almost the full half. It is still used, however, they don't necessarily need to use it. They could hook straight to the tank and the pump and take it to the mound. It doesn't necessarily, because the volume is so much lower now, they could disconnect to the lagoon and just use the mound. So that would be probably a better option, get rid of some of that mosquito habitat. And so this was on the 30th. The lighting is better, and sure enough, there's the trailers pop back up. So it's just really amazing. There's that, and that looks great. That's looking south. Boy, look at that. That house, that little building there is where they used to have laundry facilities for the folks. still garbage in that, but, you know, that, that I'm confident that will go. Again, I don't consider that a health issue.
Okay.
And these are just more shots. But for the most part, the trailers are gone.
Okay.
The hoop building has to go, right?
Yes, and, but again, that's a planning thing, in my opinion.
Okay. So did we make, I know about the hoop building has to be gone by the first of the year. Okay. Did we have anything that all the trailers have to be gone? And let me play a little devil's advocate. I have a piece of property, and I want to park a trailer or two trailers or three trailers on it, but no one's living there, and I just want to park it there. Is there anything wrong with that?
I think not. And so, you know, he's bringing in trucks that are people, I'm just thinking out loud, he's bringing in trucks and storing them for people. And a trailer, as long as it's not lived in, not hooked up, you could store that for another person too.
And right? And I guess I'm thinking about our jurisdiction is not to see if he has a mess on his property or whether it's a health concern. And if he doesn't have anything that's a health concern anymore and he is not charging people rent or people aren't staying in these buildings, mm-hmm. I think we're done.
I agree.
Okay. I would refer back to whatever task or what we proposed to the supervisors who adopted, was it either last meeting or 2 meetings ago, for him to have done. I would just like to overlay that request that we put before him to be acted upon by November 30. We happen to have that somewhere? What was the expectation of the Board of Health that had to be done by November 30?
All the trailers gone. But never did we dream that he moved them back on.
What? Yeah, I can't remember exactly what we told him to do. The thing that keeps coming back to my mind is the January 1st hoop building, or the hoop building has to be gone by January 1st. And I think the biggest thing that when we continue to talk about this is we want to make sure that there's no one living there, okay? And that's kind of the biggest issue. And so, to tell you the truth, I think, you know, as long as he doesn't have people living in these things, then I think that's okay. The question is should we check every once in a while? I mean, no offense to the owner of Crestview, but he kind of does whatever he can, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I think we just have to watch. We just have to kind of keep an eye on him.
The one problem with that is that that's not easy to do. I mean, you know, you can't be just driving there every week and knocking on the doors or something. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying that. It might go on for a while before you catch it if you can move back.
But can't, if you have suspicion, then go in?
There's bigger fish to fry, I guess, than catching squatters.
Bigger? Okay. I see what you're saying.
Staff time may not allow for that.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So,
is that we have a lot of folks that say that sign binding agreements that they're no one will live there till they get in the septic system. And, you know, we try to drive by and look whenever we can. We get the assessor to check out when he can. But there's a list of folks that we're trying to see. Is someone living there? No, or yes, or, you know. So it just gets cumbersome after a while trying to keep all these balls in the air.
Okay. But if, say, 10 months from now, we're getting an idea that people are living there, or we start to see lights, then even if driving by, then we can go in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to get to is it time for us to say, that's it, we're done? That he has fulfilled what he needed to do.
The agreement was that all the trailers would be up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he moves trailers back in there again, I think that breaks the agreement.
How many trailers were there that got brought back?
You know, if you count the fence or if you count the ones that were brought in, two, I believe.
Do we have the do we have the ability to stick to that? Is that within the realm of our that what we should do? I mean, granted, we can say anything we want, but if he says, you don't have the right, I want to put these trailers on, and there's no one living in it. So unless the Board of Supervisors gets involved or another,
well, I thought he signed that with the board.
Is that a health concern if he has trailers on the property that are not?
Yeah.
I would circle back to where I started because I'd like to know what we directed him to do, what he, I think, spoke on his own behalf to commit to do, and where we find ourselves today in light of what we've seen. And that would be getting the people out of it because the thing is, that was an agreed upon plan of action, and we have since passed a threshold point. Where are we at today? And then look at it very plainly for what it is and then decide what to do or what we would like to.
Is there a way that we can dig that up?
Thank you.
At last?
It would be in the mm-hmm. health
that
minutes.
Do you have that in the
I'm going to look online right now.
Okay.
A couple minutes.
Could we come back? Could we come back to this
Absolutely.
Issue?
Okay. Yeah.
So let's just move on.
Okay.
All right. But thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Do you want me to see Jerry tomorrow?
It would be very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll be able to speak to this.
Yes.
Thank you.
And then at least we'll know what we asked him or what he agreed to do before, and then we can decide whether to still hold him.
Okay.
I think that's a really reasonable question. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Next on the agenda is a discussion and consideration of making recommendations for staffing the Board of Health to the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Loris Olson, if you'd like to step up, please. She contacted me with a very interesting thought that she had about whether right now we have to have at least five members for our Board of Health. One of them has to be a physician. But other than that, there's no other guidance on it. We've made an effort in our in the years to try to make sure we have a good representation of people with different skill sets, okay? Mark Speck, plumbing, veterinary medicine, the community, the university. And we've also always have had someone as from the County Board of Supervisors on this committee, and they've always been a voting member, one of five, okay, which I've never had an issue with, okay, and what was brought up was maybe we could have, there would still be someone from the County Board of Supervisors, but they would just be an ad hoc member. They would be giving us advice, they'd be able to tell us whether we're overstepping our bounds, like sometimes we'll say we want to do this, and they don't know that has to go through the supervisor, so I think, you know, so the question is should they be a voting member? I'll skip ahead quick. One of the things that was brought up that sometimes the County Board of Supervisors will be making a vote on this committee that will also go to the actual full supervisors committee. So it could be a, right?
Marissa, we have a, you know, and I don't need to have a conversation with us, but as an advising consent board.
Yeah.
It will be forwarded recommendations of board act on.
Right. And the question is the fact that county board of if the person who's on the Board of Supervisors is on the Board of Health, is there a vote, a binding vote for when they're on the supervisors?
So you're saying we don't need the supervisor on the board?
No, I'm thinking that's what was brought up. We still need someone from the County Board of Supervisors on the board, or we should have one, in my opinion. But whether we want them voting.
Oh.
Okay. So if I can now fill in a couple gaps why we're here at this point, is that you do have two seats up for reappointment. There is also the issue of gender balance. It is state laws. contacted the board, went through this discussion 3 years ago, and the Board of Supervisors at the time decided not to opt to follow the law in this particular, to keep a particular group assembled. Okay, on the board, but it has been that at that time 3 years ago was the first time it came up to move the supervisor to an ex officio position, and there was another board. It might have been around that time or even before. It was a conservation board that also had a voting supervisor sitting on the board. And that was brought up with kind of a change in who was serving on the board back, and I mean Board of Supervisors at that time, that put it in a position where a supervisor had two votes. And was that fair? So I think that before the conversation, 3 years with the Board of Health, this was maybe conservation, would have been 6 years ago, then they moved the position of conservation to an ex officio member, and John's done a good job of laying that out. Where we are now is that there's an opportunity now to once again get gender balance on the board, which is then in compliance with the law, but does it short you, Board of Health, with 5 members right now? And the law says that the Board of Supervisors will appoint a minimum of 5 voting members. But, so it's your board in many respects. So you can decide how many you'd like to ask us to put on the board, to appoint to the board. But John and I, when we had our conversation, he pointed out that sometimes it's not that easy to get people to serve on the board. And so you want to fill it too much. But from the gender equity standpoint and also from the two-vote standpoint, it would seem that the options are either to make the supervisor an ex officio, so coming, giving all the advice, et cetera, you know, that you would have, but the supervisor would not vote, or there's the option to not have a supervisor at all. And the timing on this would be that making board appointments for the supervisors always occurs in the organizational meeting of January 2nd. So that is why I made the contact to John to get ready for the January 2nd, the annual organization meeting, and that's where supervisors are assigned their board assignments. And, of course, we've got a change in the board, the actual Board of Supervisors. So it doesn't seem right for the Board of Supervisors, even this new board, to move forward and just make an arbitrary decision without asking the Board of Health, what are your options? What are your concerns of switching from the situation we have right now? Because we do, I personally, as one of 3 supervisors, am very committed to having gender balance on our boards and commissions.
Well, if we put on a female supervisor on our board, then we would be gender balanced.
If we need gender balance, but you don't eliminate the conflict of 2 votes.
2 votes, what do you mean?
1 vote there at the Board of Health, with you voting maybe to send forward a budget, or voting to send forward a promotion, voting to send forward legislation, or an ordinance. That has to be considered, all 3 of those have to be considered by the Board of Supervisors.
So, yeah.
The supervisor turns around and gets to vote again.
See, what we're talking about is, what she's talking about is reclusing. Yeah, that what would happen is the person on the Board of Supervisors would have to recluse on some of these votes and issues.
So if we have, we still have to have a supervisor on our board though, right?
No, the law does not require that.
Doesn't require that. So if we had another person being 5, it's either going to be, it could be 3 and 2. It's going to either be 3 and 2 or 4 and 1. Female, male. I mean,
gender balance dictates
so
that they take, since most boards and commissions in Iowa are in fact odd numbered, all right, they're considering gender balance to be 2 of 1 and 3 of the other.
Okay.
Okay. So this ex officio doesn't count toward that gender balance. Maybe that's why there's a disconnect. We're talking about gender balance for voting members. So if you move the supervisor position, okay, to an ex officio, you're still only looking at gender balance, in my opinion, about what I want to comply with state law on, is to do that among the 5 voting members. So that the supervisor doesn't become an advisor and not counting towards the balance.
So we'd add another board member, so there'd be 6 of us up here.
There'd be 6 of you sitting up there, 5 of you voting is one way to go. Another way for you to make a decision is to just not have a supervisor, period. If you will, there are 3 boards that function, well, there are more, but the 3 main boards that meet monthly is a good way to say this, okay, that function with independent authority in some situations are Conservation, Board of Health, VA Commission. Okay? VA Commission has no supervisor sitting on it, even in an ex officio position. Conservation has the ex officio position. Which ones would you recommend to the Board of Supervisors that will meet on January 2nd?
So that's the question. That's
correct.
Thoughts?
We could just have, there could be just 5 of us, 5 board members, and no supervisor then.
There could be. That would be, that would be one way to go. Might add 1 of 3 supervisors with only 1 vote. My concern is for the first year at least that there be a supervisor in an advisory position because it's a change. But that doesn't mean that's how the whole board on January 2nd would vote.
I'd like to see that continue as having them in an advisory position.
What she's talking about is not having them in the position they're in now.
Not voting, but being
non-voting.
Yeah, that's
advisor.
What I say.
That's
so
what you
I
think?
Agree with that.
Okay, so that. I actually kind of like them on the board. I like someone from.
You want them in the room.
Because there are things that we. Yeah. There are things we bring up that, we don't know, like, what we can do and what we can't do. And
yeah,
that's what you can really.
Now, when we did not have a supervisor for many years, it throws a tremendous burden on the chair. Try to carry things to the supervisors when they haven't been privy to the discussions.
So do you agree with that, Mark? That we want a supervisor in the room?
Well, I guess my experience is your experience. I haven't done anything other than what we did.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't have anything to compare it to. And I always say, if I'm going to do something, I just want to know I'm doing it for a purpose. And I just, what am I fixing? I get the gender balance thing. That and yet, I have no problem there.
Do we have enough applicants to get another person coming up here? For renewal.
There will be,
We need 2 females at least.
Correct.
That's one deficit.
So now we need 2.
That's right. So 2. The process, sorry. The
to keep what you want.
I know where you're at. Right. Okay. So on December 18th, Supervisor Sanders, who is current chair of the board, his plan is to bring forth 2 names of recommendation to fill the 2 seats, the Kristen seat that expires, Mark, yours expires. Kristen's ineligible. And we have a total of 4 applicants. And Supervisor Sanders and our Director of External Operations has already done interviews with everybody now, I understand. And then they will recommend 2. And on December 18th, that's the day, 11/7/18. So the current board, consisting of Supervisor Sanders, Supervisor Chitty, and myself, we will vote on recommendations to fill several chairs in various departments. So 2 will be filled on the 18th. On January 2nd will be the organizational meeting. And we can make a decision if we change the seating. Okay, move either get rid of the supervisor altogether or change it to an organ to an ex officio, that's another open seat for your minimum of five. And then another one of those applicants can be appointed at that time. So we would be able to accommodate three of the four applicants.
So you would like us to recommend that we get two more, so we have three.
No, I think the big thing that Loris wants is, one, we want two decisions to be made, or what our preference are. We won't make the decision, but our preference is, one, whether or not we want someone from the Board of Supervisors sitting on this board. And the second thing I think we have to see is whether our preference will be that they are an ex officio member or a voting member.
Correct.
Those are the two things that they want.
But we still need to have more. We need to have, they're going to have to get three people to add to our board.
Right, exactly.
Those are
committees.
Right.
When the supervisors, because you guys decide the new board of supervisors coming in, won't you, between you three, decide who wants to be with us? Between you guys, and that's not for us to decide.
That is correct, but as I'm making out the draft about who likely will be the supervisor assigned to each board, I need to know what to do. Do I make it a voting or an ex officio, or do we get rid, or is it your recommendation to get rid of? The new board will vote on Denver 2nd on the decision. We're asking you for your preferences.
Right.
I would, just where we are in this conversation, help Mark out. Why don't we take, let's split this, right? Now, let's just decide, do you want a supervisor at this meeting?
Yes.
Okay, that's half the issue. Now, let's go back to the rest.
So the other issue is whether or not they should be a non-voting.
Non-voting.
That would be the second committee.
Exactly.
Right. I actually am, I kind of like them. I'm fine with the Board of Supervisors being a voting member.
They're not
voting
on anything.
Right, right. And if they need to recluse themselves from something that they will be voting on later, then they can just do that, like budget things.
And I would tell you, in 2.5 years, I don't think I've ever voted for anything here that I didn't vote for there.
Yeah.
So I didn't, just personal observation. It's not that, on a detriment to any, anything that you've heard here, but I spent the time listening to that. Like, I don't think I ever come out of a Board of Health meeting, down to a Board of Supervisors meeting, and changed.
Right, exactly.
But once again, we have it. I would say conservation has success on this ex officio level. VA board has a tremendous amount of success too. So we have models that actually work. You just have the opportunity to make consensus, offer it up, let the board act upon, and ultimately in 2019 they'll vote on it.
And I'd like to point out too that as you look at those three commissions or boards that I talked about before, VA has probably the most federal and state dictated requirements with it. And they don't do anything that doesn't come to us, and usually it's just the budget and appointment, making of a day, today is the supermarket day or whatever, okay? You have some independent enforcement authority, and legislation has to go through us. But let's face it, a public health crisis occurs, and you guys all of a sudden are it, right? You have your independent. And the conservation by law is somewhat independent. Just I want to make it clear about
where you sparked something in my mind. Now, we went back to Hulu. Remember when we were doing some of this deep diving in regards to what the obligations, the legal obligations are in membership,
Board of Health?
Yep. Okay, you are the ex officio status of a board supervisor recuses them of any obligation. That's all on voting members, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
What's your view on the voting part? Whether you should be able to vote or not vote? What do you have, any one way or the other on that?
Well, until Marty spoke just a couple seconds ago, all right, I was very much that it should be a non-voting, but I did forget about possible liabilities. So what can be done here between now and January 2nd, I think we should do, is if you, as I'd like to hear from the county attorney. you know, just about some kind of, if removing the supervisor puts the other individual board members in some kind of different liability. And I'm sorry I didn't make that call, but Marty, until you said anything, it didn't occur to me. Because it's not specific in the law.
Well, you've had deep dives with Keith in regards to our obligations. Keith Morgan, and clearly what got spelled out, and I've been calling your email, Shane and him, was a real fascinating intellectual exercise because you were pushing out into areas that there's a responsibility to this board that happens in circumstances you wouldn't think. This seems like a sterile exercise of civic responsibility. No, frankly, it's not. And I think as you're going to get, we're going to get a presentation here from the county public health nurse, that you would find that we have obligations as being a member of this board that transcend voting. So I would say that, yeah, I would want to hear from what Keith Morgan had to say and what Jessica Reynolds had to say, so that we don't put ourselves in, oh, well, that was a great idea, we probably shouldn't have done that.
So, and I'd also like to now come back here and point out that you could have a six voting member board with one being the supervisor. The law says at minimum five. The supervisor shall appoint that minimum five. Okay.
And
so you could have a six.
And what Loris is concerned is, say we replace Kristen with another female, we keep Mark, and a board supervisor is a female. But if they recluse themselves and all of a sudden the voting is not. But if there's six, and that sixth person is female for gender neutrality, then even if the board of supervisor position recluses themselves, mm-hmm. we still have gender neutrality. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. No,
my personal opinion, because I've been thinking about what you've been talking about, I would like the board of supervisor to be a voting member. You know, I would, and I would recommend that we open up for another position. I mean, some of the things I want to talk about over the next couple of years, I think the more input we have is better.
Can I give you an example?
The what?
Can I give you an example?
Please.
Yes. Yourself,
Matt Corey, Environmental Health. Several years ago, we had a joint meeting between the Board of Health and the Board of Supervisors, which made it very difficult to have because one of the Board of Supervisors sitting on the Board of Health was not able to act as a Board of Health member. He sat as the Board of Supervisor member. So there's that separation that can't happen when you have a voting member as Board of Health. So that was one of my concerns with that.
See, and then the sixth member would help with that.
Yeah. But using Marty as an example, can you separate yourself as a Board of Supervisor member and sit here and listen to things as a Board of Health member that wants to, like, it was a budget item. Can you push that as a Board of Health member sitting here with the Board of Supervisor?
All I would have to offer you, Matt, in the sense that you're talking about me specific, is the fact that I've never said anything in this capacity that I did not carry through.
Yeah, I know. I understand that, but I mean,
that's not just the next person helpful.
Yeah. And to be quite honest, it has always happened that way.
Yeah.
You know, it always has happened that way. In fact, until recently, the person at this position was always someone from the Board of Supervisors.
I think the discussion that was had in Paul's passing was the fact that as I was onboarding, we thought we were pretty robustly provisioned with the people we had on this, and that maybe it was time to shine. And I think that clearly on the out years that you've seen it, I don't think we had seen a diminution in the effectiveness of the Board of Health without a supervisor chairing it. I think, frankly, we've been enriched by the fact that you carry the narratives on a lot of on the issues we have. You drive the agenda on a lot of what we do.
Which is fine and stuff. But I don't know. I guess my opinion is I think I would like our recommendation to be that we have a board of supervisor on this
as
a voting member, and that we open it up for another.
What about letting the board of supervisors decide after they talk to the attorney whether they should be a voting member or not voting.
Well, they will decide. What we're saying is
whatever. Let's leave that up to them.
Yeah, they will.
We'll recommend putting another person on the board.
And keeping the board a supervisor.
Right. As a voting member, in consultation with the county attorney and the emergency manager in regards to the legal obligations of this membership on this board.
And this is all just our preference. This
I
is
understand,
our preference.
But...
And I also
it's
understand.
Your board, you're the ones who. I'm so glad you spoke up, Marty. Thank you.
Well, the thing is, you know, we don't want to trip on it. We don't want to say that, okay, we come to an agreement. We're not having this conversation that way. But I would not think that we would be well serving the public in the capacity we all serve if we didn't look at it from 360 degrees. And I think that is one that we clearly, because I, as you start as you realize what the obligations are serving here, I mean, that was driven home. Just at the flu, Chris Parent brought us over talking about what was the obligation possibly as it moved out of the community if it would turn into a pandemic type situation. And it was not just, oh, hey, just carry your phone around with you. You might have some legal responsibilities you have at the phone.
I will communicate with the county attorney either this afternoon or tomorrow morning on my schedule. I will copy Dr. Passion as chair of the board. I'm hesitant to. It'll be okay to copy Supervisor Chitty also. Because the vote, whatever happens, will be January 2nd. So, okay, so we don't have a problem with the open meeting.
So we're clear. Is everyone in agreement about what we would prefer?
Okay.
So do you want, as far as the voting on the supervisor?
I want him voting.
You want him voting?
I do.
Well, we've got the extra chair here.
Yeah, we got the extra chair.
I think the Marine put the best.
Right, exactly. Okay, great. Okay, so that's not really a motion or anything, it's just a recommendation.
Correct, a recommendation or a six.
How about the candidates for the other position? In the past, we reviewed the...
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, as part of this. So do we, like, look at their applications? Do we, like, give you our thoughts that we would like this person or not this person? Or do we... What do we do? I mean,
they are public records, okay, first of all. Second of all, the appointments won't be until December 18th. So I can go back to Deb Shilbrock, who's the one who has the applications, let her know that you have turned in a request to see them so that she can email them out to all of you. I think that's what you're asking, so you can see them, okay? I believe at least two of the other candidates, possibly the third one is here, okay? If possibly if all their candidates are staying for the end of the meeting, maybe they can introduce themselves. It's up to you. It's your meeting, okay? Mr. Speck. So then what happens, what should happen is if you have any recommendations, any concerns, they should go to Supervisor Sanders with a CC to Deb Shilbrock, Director of External Operations. Because the process will be if they, those two people, primarily Supervisor Sanders as chair, will make a recommendation to the full Board of Supervisors on the names. And there will be two people as of the 18th. So your opportunity to weigh in is between now and I would say the Friday before, so that'd be about December 15th. So you have about 10 days.
So, but the decision to whether or not we increase the membership of our board won't be made till January 2nd.
Correct. That's okay. Just the nature of how it flows.
I'm okay with that.
So
I just want to
the other two candidates of whoever is voted on December 18th, the other two candidates will be in limbo, if you will, for a couple more weeks. Given the outcome of the January 2nd discussion, it'll be a separate item on the January 2nd agenda, all right? And then one of them is considered to be for the appointment at that. I mean, we're not reissuing the application process or anything.
Okay, great. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. Since Supervisor Olson has said that our two candidates are at the meeting, would they be willing to come up and introduce themselves and just say hello? I would appreciate it if you're out there.
Cool.
Who's out there? Great. Oh, wait, can you step there? Yes, step there. Because we got, yeah. And then identify yourself so you can be on the minutes and stuff.
My name is Marisa Tabatai.
In food technology?
And 66, and a PhD in biochemistry, protein chemistry from Ohio State. And I was employed at the National Animal Disease Center as a research chemist developing vaccines for domestic animal diseases, bacterial diseases, for various diseases. Is familiar with brucellosis, mycoplasma, turkey diseases, pig diseases, bovine respiratory disease. So I've worked at the NABC for 34 years. I've also been appointed as professor of biochemistry. I'm now an affiliate of the biochemistry department. And I was also appointed in the Department of PMPM, Veterinary Pathology and Medicine, as a field professor. And I'm very much interested in this position.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
No.
That's a perfect introduction. That's exactly
very good.
Thank you.
Thank
you. So, yes, or no?
But my name is Rudy Bartholomew, and my husband and I are chiropractors in Ames. So we were at Bartholomew Chiropractic, which was in Somerset Village, and we just recently bought to our office. And so now we're at Platinum Chiropractic. That's really a good landmark for people. We also just recently, over the summer, purchased a CrossFit gym in Ames as well. So we own early on CrossFit. And
wait, what do you own?
Iridium CrossFit. So it used to be CrossFit West Ames, which is very close to this area. It's out right as right before this.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. And so we had the opportunity to take ownership, and so we changed the name to Iridium CrossFit because we are a Platinum Chiropractic, and they are both precious metals.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Very good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Third candidate in the audience. So I'm Molly Lee, and I work at the Center for Food Security and Public Health with Dr. Lee. So I'm a veterinarian. I was in mixed animal private practice before coming to the vet school. And I've been here about 3 years now. I got my master's in public health in 2017, and then this past year got board certified with veterinary medicine. So my work at the center primarily involves coronary animal disease preparedness at the time, so I did a lot of emergency preparedness work for things like foot and mouth disease and avian influenza. I've done some work with potentially zoonotic avian influenza. And then I also do a lot of just general training and education and exercise and things like that related to food security and the intersection of veterinary medicine.
Thank you very much.
And I would only ask is everybody live in Story County? You know, we had that discussion up here.
And Mark, you reapply, correct?
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, so we have four. Anyone else? Are those four? Excellent. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate you speaking to us. Yeah. All right. Any other questions at all on the makeup thing? Okay, so let's move on. Okay, discussion and consideration of the fiscal year 20 Environmental Health Department's proposed budget.
Can we go back to that?
That's right.
Jerry?
Oh, great. Excellent.
Jerry Moore, come on down.
Come on down, come on up.
We've been waiting
Thank
for you.
That's right, we have to go back to that. Great. Someone's got to keep me.
Right.
Certainly not me. Okay. And you identify yourself for the
Jerry Moore, Story County Planning and Development Director.
Very good. Okay.
And I gave Jerry full credit for going there full day.
And we do get the nice photographs.
We were there on the Thursday the 29th. That was the deadline. He was to have all of the mobile homes removed from the park.
Did he?
Well, Not really. There's one mobile home that was converted to storage. The hoop building is still there, but the Board of Supervisors approved that permit, which allowed him 30 days to basically dismantle it. He owns that temporary hoop building. So he has 30 days from the 29th to remove that from the property. There were two mobile homes that were in the northeast portion of the park, which he referred to as being a fence. But we don't have, we require permits for fences, and we don't have permits for those. The dirt pile that was in the southwest area that he brought in, that was still there. There's a lot of debris from the removal of some of these units. Some of that I think he can recycle, blocks, metal material. And then there's vehicles. There's semi-trucks, trucks, and other vehicles that need to be removed. So our meeting was for 4:30. I started taking photos. The camera batteries died. I started using my cell phone for the north part of the park. And the quality, when I got back to the office, the quality of those photos was pretty bad. So I went back on Friday, and there were two additional mobile homes that had been brought in on the north drive, the northeast-west drive. So the way I left it with him on Thursday was I requested information about the proposed use of the property. He just told me that he still intends to sell the property, but he still had questions about the use of the hoop building and then some other things. But I asked for a compliance schedule and schedule for removal of some of these other items that I mentioned by today. And then, like I said, I went back out on Friday and there were two additional mobile homes that weren't there on Thursday. So I'm not sure where they were, when they were brought there, whether it was after I left on Thursday.
Did he know you were coming?
On Friday, I sent him an email telling him that I was going to go back out.
You're going to go back out. Okay, but they knew you were coming on the day before.
Yeah.
Friday was the day.
Thursday we had a meeting
designated for you to check.
Yeah.
So Friday was, he already knew we were coming on that day.
Did you have a chance to ask him about the future of the decision?
Not yet. But he was supposed to provide me with some information about the use of the property and compliance schedule. And we have not received anything yet. So I've had some discussions with the county attorney's office, and we don't receive something today.
Okay. And that notice of violation will be from the zoning?
Planning
and zoning. So it sounds like right now, I hate to say this to you, but it sounds like this might be in your life.
I think it is for the most part.
I think so. We have to go back to what about this is a health issue, if anything, and if not, it's time for us to step up.
Okay. So.
It's
a
collective dream, go home.
That's great. Mission accomplished.
There you go.
We need a big banner on an aircraft carrier behind us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Was it our
meeting?
Yeah, were you able to find
us?
Yes.
What did we say?
So at the August 7th, 2018 meeting, the motion was made to... The recommendation was made by planning and development that if the August 31st, 2018 deadline is met in by November 29th, 2018, that all mobile homes are removed from the property, Mr. LeBaron will receive a notice of violation. If after 30 days all mobile homes are not removed from the property, Mr. LeBaron will then receive a citation.
Okay.
That's what planning is doing.
Yes. Okay.
When I was there, he had a lot of questions about the use of the hoop building.
How did he represent the hoop building to you when he asked for that CFP?
How did he represent it? Yes.
He had asked you permission to put it up. How did he represent it?
It was to be used for dismantling mobile homes to remove hazardous materials.
Was it ever used in that capacity?
Yeah. What's he want to use it for now? Did he say?
He had a question about using it to store a bobcat.
He's having wild animals.
Business.
No, never
like a.
I know. It's a joke. Sorry.
A little heavy.
So I have a question. So can we store trailers and trucks on this property?
The property is zoned commercial and industrial, and warehousing is a permitted use. But I think the intent is it would be something that would be undercover, so buildings. So he has a plan to store vehicles, trucks under no cover, and that would be something that would require an amendment.
His code for having privately owned yet non-licensed vehicles. I mean, what is 2, 3?
Well, if they're licensed, that...
I mean, but we're probably talking those semis.
Unlicensed, inoperable, three. You can have three under our ordinance.
Where is he on that? Where would you say as far as non-licensed?
He's exceeding that, probably. But he told me he'd like to buy some of those. These are other people's vehicles, semi-trucks. He's interested in acquiring
Right? Okay. Right?
Yep.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you very much. If you need help from us again, let us know. Okay? But right now, I think we're going to leave it in your capable hands. And thank you very much for your assistance when we were going through all this.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. Okay? All right. Okay. Shall we move on?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, so 6.3, discussion and consideration of fiscal year 20 Environmental Health Department's proposed budget. Recommendations of the Board of Supervisors.
So, back to the other topic for 1 minute. So, any outstanding violations, things like that, I can just avoid everything, correct?
Yep, I think so, yeah.
All the work helps.
Sounds right, yeah. Okay,
I think
thank you.
Pass your capacity on this one. Yep. Clearly, it's Jerry's.
Okay. Right, so, fiscal year 20, Environmental Health Department's proposed budget.
So in her view, you should have the budget for the health department schedules. So go over on the sit and look at and put schools for I'm just gonna briefly go over it, and there's really only one major change involved in this. So on the revenues, it's pretty static from the last 3 years, and the money mainly comes from the Grand counties. And then also from the tattoo tanning and pool inspections, the septage pumper inspections, the septic permits, well permits, and the time transfer inspections. Okay. And that is pretty much right around $80,000 for a few years. So that's basically our revenue, and then for the general funds cover the rest of the expenses. Now, switching, do you have any questions on revenues? Switching then to the expenditures, so I have to prepare two budgets. One has to include the salaries and the benefits just so that the budgets make sense. So I prepare that with that information for this board, and then I take it back out for submitting it to the board of supervisors for our workshops, because those are items that they build and they control all the funds. We have no input on that. So, let's see. So everything pretty much stays the same on this budget. I tweaked it a little bit here and there just for things to come up and down. So the only thing that's really different is on that very final page. I am putting in a request for around close to $30,000 item, and that would include like a gator and a portable dry gator, a soil probe, and trailer on.
Well, I hope that probe's powered. $14,000 should be something.
It should be something, yeah.
What are you going to do with that? With the first
what am I going to do with
that?
What
are you going to do with that?
I'm going to do soil pouring for septic systems.
Okay.
Doing it manually is starting to get difficult for me. And then also, weather predictions are for drought next summer. I don't know if they're on or off, but in those dry years, it's nearly impossible. So if I don't get this, another option would be to put a proposal in the regulations that have a soil professional or an engineer do the soil evaluations for these different sites. And a lot of other counties have that. And then I would be like the, I would check on the work, but I would do all of them. So I'm getting to the point where I feel like those are the two options for myself.
I agree, we need that power auger.
Well, I knew you would.
I've helped her do it. That's really hard. I'm here to tell you. You hard to push that probe in the ground. You bend it, and it's pretty bad.
Okay. Do you need a motion for that we approve it?
I'm sorry, yes. So for the entire budget, well, if you want to take things out or add things or whatever, that is your place. But and then if you're okay with everything presented here, then yes, I need a motion, a second, and a vote on whether or not to recommend this budget for the right.
This will be dealt with here after the first of the year. So.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. There's been moved and seconded that we approve this budget. Any further questions that you have for Margaret or whatever? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you, Margaret.
Good luck with the supervisors. They are brutal. All right. Okay. Story County Environmental Health, Mark. Once again, the Margaret Jane Show.
Just the general report now.
Yeah.
The portal. Okay. I guess. So.
You're afraid that further.
You know, I got to tell them, I've got the business part.
No, don't worry. I think her nightmares will be mine.
That's right. Okay, so this is my quarterly report. Okay, so for year for wells, so for this year, 12, 7 of which are water, 22 plugins, 1 cistern, 2 rehabs, 193 water samples. So that's high, and 38 county transfers. Out of the grants to counties, we have about 15,000 remaining. For septic, so this is an upgrade that's going in. It's pressurized. You can see the sweep valves on the end to prove their squirt test, to prove that they've got enough pressure going through those pipes. And for the numbers, let's see, 96 septic applications come in this year. We've done 55 septic inspections. So let's see. So yeah, we're a little ahead of last year, and definitely ahead of 2016 as far as permits coming in. Pool, tattoo, and tanning. Let's see. We had a complaint on the spa at American. Tattoo. We have one. I have a game there. There's a new one in Collins, actually.
There was a new one in Ames.
Oh, and so there's two new ones.
Right.
Okay.
This is the list.
And this is a picture of the one in Collins. So two new ones. So we're up to 7,000, I guess. 10 total.
Yeah, the new one in Ames is microblading, so with the spa.
Okay. Okay. The microblading. You want to explain to folks what that is?
Oh, it's with the permanent makeup.
So we have to make those
permanent makeup. We have two names that do permanent makeup.
Oh, like permanent eyebrows.
Eyeliner.
All kinds of stuff.
You can do that now?
You can do that.
Get rid of wrinkles?
You
want to
pay for
it? How about getting rid of wrinkles? I was putting it down more often. I don't hear about it around
now. And then the fellow, the individual that's opening the one in Collins, he was actually on the state board to recommend guidance on regulation changes. So he's really, you know.
This is his work.
Yeah.
We have Matt's phone.
Yeah. I mean, needless to say, we have Kathy doing those inspections, not Matt.
She doesn't want to come back and do it.
A little conflict of interest there, Chris. And then tanning a new one is eggs and that too. Do you guys need to add anything?
No, the new one in Ames is in that new apartment building that's more one of the student houses.
Okay, so other tasks that we've been doing, we submitted a water assessment survey for the study that came out, and the direction the county wants to go, they want to get input from the state first. We've been getting a lot of calls from certified contractors who are already certified, and it's time for them to re-up, and so they're all panicking, wanting to know how they can get three extra credits here and there. So we've been doing a lot of that. That's the annual evaluation, and I was hard pressed to find anything negative to say, so I didn't. So, complaint investigation in Colo about hoarding a lot of junk and animal harborage. Complaint investigation Deer Creek, and that was more of a landlord tenant thing. Let's see, we accepted the abstract to speak at the Governor's Public Health Conference, and again, Crestview, I can't get enough of Crestview. Closing Crestview, Story County's approach to closing a dilapidated mobile home park. And John Cashman's got to speak on that.
Excellent.
Thank you for doing that.
Thanks.
Okay.
So, okay, so the thing, oh, that doesn't show for you, the yellow doesn't show. The thing that we've been working on a lot lately is that, as I'm sure you all heard, we received three applications for housing finance, all from one family. And two of them are within 2 miles of the city in Nevada. And so that is causing a lot of concern, a lot from the city of Nevada folks. So this shows the distance, like the nearest town. So Fernald folks will be affected by the one in Richland Section 10. And then the other two are the ones that are closer to Nevada. And the public hearing is going to be on December 12th at the regular course of service.
Do we have any input into these type of issues, these CAFOs? Do we have, like I know there's something about the master matrix, and that if they meet certain criteria, they're probably going to get approved, at least as I understand as I read the newspaper about this. Do we, as a Board of Health, ever make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors that we would agree with this or that we would not agree with this?
I think that your opinion should be expressed. I think a statement from the Board of Health would be very important and would hold weight.
But we've never done that in the past.
We have never done that in the past. But do know that I am the information gatherer and the Board of Supervisors decide whether or not to recommend approval or disapproval based on scoring and or comments. And then the DNR gets the final decision. So, right.
If they meet their criteria for the master matrix for putting these things up, and we make our own, as a Board of Health, our own criteria, whatever it'll be.
Okay.
What if we, and I'm thinking in the future, not today at this meeting, I'm thinking in the future.
You have a concern, you mean?
Yeah. Or if we have a concern and we say we don't think there should be a hog confinement facility here, and we give our reasons and the Board of Supervisors says, well, that's good enough for us. Can they not approve it?
They don't have the power to approve or disapprove. They only recommend.
And then the DNR.
DNR is the main file anyway.
But the Board of Supervisors could say, we don't recommend this approval.
But you can't stop it.
All three have points.
You've already scored this thing, right?
Yes.
So yeah, they passed this,
so pretty much the DNR is going to pass it.
So there could be like millions of people.
I will say though that one previous one, the applicant backed out because of pressure from the community. He just couldn't take it. And so everyone in the call, like they asked if there's anything they can do, and I said, please come to the meeting and express your concern. And I recommend the board do that.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm kind of mulling this over.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
I
don't think we've not done it in the past, and I think it would be hard, and I don't know enough about these that I think any of us could make a recommendation at this time, and so I don't think it'd be fair that we did that. I'm thinking about the future, because this will come up again.
We'll
come up again in the county, and I think that, and I'm thinking that we need to kind of start weighing in on these individuals. We need to get information. We need information presented to us, and then we can give our recommendations to the Board of Supervisors.
That's why they have this matrix thing.
Right.
The tools that Board of Supervisors will be giving to them generate out of Des Moines, and your cause is worthy. I get it. I live by K folks. I've just missed the boundary on the west one, the southwest one, but there's nothing other than a stern letter to the DNR that will go on a pile of stern letters that it's going to be affected by the Board of Supervisors in Indiana County.
So let's not assume defeat right off the bat. I think
once again, it will be dealt with in the legislature and ultimately signed by a governor to give additional. It's not a body of law that's brand new. It's 15 years old. It probably can stand a revision. Whether the appetite exists for anybody to open up and look at it, I suspect not. I'm not a defeatist in the sense that I get it. I get it. But you have to acknowledge that which is. You know, I wish it were 75 degrees when I walk out in the parking lot, but I can't change that. I take 70. I don't mean to be greedy, but it's just like it is the world we find ourselves in.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Continuing on. So Stephanie has provided these pictures. They are from the Fraser practice room in Bernal. That one was under notice of violation for several years. They finally agreed to. Instead of replacing the septic system, they left it just empty and animals were taking over it, and that, so they decided to go ahead and work. So, yes, and that's true. But that's what it looks like now. So they still have a little work to do.
The good part of the backstory on this debate, they made an offer to other volunteer departments and five others brought some of those people in and did this day. This was a 7-8 hour burn. Started this out. And so you had people as they were on boarding their respective fire departments had the opportunity to combat a structural fire in ways that, if not in real life, they never get to. So this was a really big positive for a number of
really
fire agencies in Canada.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
And then these pictures are taken from that email that I forwarded to you about a month ago, and I think it's a big deal, and it's really upsetting the way it's been handled by DNR, I think. So River to River was bought out by Roto-Rooter, and then the complaint came in on this land application of septage. And what they were doing is basically backing up, and you can see all the ruts there, backing up, dumping it, and driving away. The tomato plants were about a foot and a half there, and the field crop was killed. So, a foot and a half of tomato, that's several weeks or months of septic being there, killing stuff. But that is not land application, that is dumping. That's just dumping.
Where's that at?
That is on 590th. South of Roland. So,
And this particular pumper, you know, he was certified, but he didn't have this truck certified. So that was one violation. And then just the lack of them distributing it, applying it rather than dumping it, that was another one. So they went over, DNR field office went over to Roto-Rooter's office in Boone County and talked to them, and then they issued a letter. And then, so the owner of Roto-Rooter, I called and said, it's no big deal, they don't have any problem whatsoever. The way I read it, it was just like, no, you're wrong here, you're wrong there. So they went ahead and they applied for their application to have this truck on it, but, and that's the end of the story. So then they resubmitted their application, no maps or anything. So this site isn't even shown as an application site. And the other rub is that they are inspected by Boone County and Story County. So we really don't have a lot of control over it. So it's DNR and Boone County, even though they do business in our county.
But they can't just dump that in Story County.
Well,
like that.
Apparently somebody, the landowner, gave him permission to do that.
What's DNR say about that?
They said, well, it's a problem, but we didn't make them clean it up, and they can't do it anymore. Yeah, so I'm just saying, so I'm not, so just today, about an hour ago, I received their resubmittal of their application, and it is so wrong, it couldn't be more wrong, so that's, so stay tuned. I'm not going to let this one drop, this is really, I think it's really bad.
Have they been doing any more since this, do you know?
Well, they probably picked a different spot, but, I mean, it's just interesting. So, anyway, stay tuned on that one. And then we've done conceptual reviews. Leon Wooper's subdivision near Green Lake, actually coming up Thursday. Friedrich's Dobson Farms subdivision near Gilbert, that's going to be a biggie.
Where's that at?
That's on County Line Road near Gilbert.
South of Legion?
It's north of Eagle Ridge. North of Eagle Ridge, right? Yeah. 170. And they keep changing the number, but it's going to be 50 to 70 lots, I believe. You know, they keep kind of changing the map. So they're working on that. And then Natty subdivision had a lot of erosion with all this rain. And then we also did a Red Barn Winery conceptual review.
Where's that winery?
Everyone perked up with that.
I'm asking on behalf of the row.
Where's that winery? City, right in the 180th and the highway.
35.
Right,
just
by Storybook
Orchard.
Oh, okay,
all right.
They're building the new building.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
everyone's thinking.
Okay, new destination.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so, but if you'd like to hear the traffic, go by what you drink or
want. I think I'll be okay.
Okay,
training
meetings, we did a bunch of stuff, and so I'm not going to read them all. One cool thing that Kathy and I did, we went up to that Habitat for Humanity. We tried all these different, they put in, the IOWA puts in different systems as a demo site. And so we learned water loop system went in, and it's a non-soil based system that we got to see go in, and maybe pretty soon we'll sort of have. We'll see. It's nice to have options. And this is a big thank you to Marty and Kristen. Been really, really nice having you on board. Just, I feel very comfortable having you guys. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What she said. Thank you.
Okay. So, thank you very much, Margaret. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Your tattoo boilers. Have you got any complaints about tattoo? I got a notification from outbreaks of mycobacteria infection and tattoos in Florida. Okay, that's a long way away from us, but they trace it back too contaminated black ink from the major supplier of black ink that comes out of New York, and I don't know how widespread that is. They didn't have any follow-up. But if that's a major supplier of ink, it's probably all over the United States.
I haven't heard of the gal was on leave, so if she got the message about it, we might get disconnect there, but we can certainly look into that.
How do you know it was going to come through you?
Well, the state issues permits, so it would go to them and then out to us.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay, so Story County Public Health. Thank you for being patient.
Interesting diseases have popped up.
Yes, go
ahead. I'm Teresa Ferrari, the Story County Public Health.
And I'm Sherry Sub. So we only had a handful of, and I checked with Leanne in the hospital to see if they were having her flu, and she said in October they had seven, and seven in November, but they've all been outpatients. They haven't had a single inpatient. So that's still on the low side. CDC is the same thing. The report said that activity in the United States has increased slightly, but it's still on the low, but they are anticipating it starts to increase in the next few weeks. So what we did do was we put it on our Facebook site, still to get for people to get their vaccination. We're still promoting that. We try to get it next week. It did go on the Facebook position. Then disease-wise, we weren't really affected by that. Romaine lettuce, we did have some case of that, thankfully. So our diseases have been, we had 16 September, that's kind of slow on, big thing right now is greenhouse gas and coronavirus. So we actually was just sort of there's plenty of things. I checked on Monday. I was checked.
Oh, yeah, the gastrointestinal.
And that's really the only place we heard.
Where was that at?
Iowa State, at Student Health.
Oh, Iowa State.
Green Hills. I'm sorry. I missed
that. 76?
76. They had like 57 to come down.
They went on a cruise line. They went on a cruise ship. That's what they did. They went on a Disney cruise ship. Oh. And that's what they brought back in. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's good.
The virus is in here again. It's not from a food source.
It's not what?
It's not from a food source.
Okay.
It's very contagious. It's a short incubation period. It's like if you eat it, you touch a handle, and you go to certain food. And the incubation period was normal. So it's not a food source. So IPH, Nick, our panelists are immunity allergic, so and also we talk to them about the immune prescription because of the prescription. So
that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Very good.
So we've been busy about Sherry and I doing school lives. We're pretty much done with schools and then we've got some figures and immunizations.
If you get any pushback, you know, you can't pick up a paper. You can't go to eat without seeing people make the case that they don't want their children and themselves vaccinated. Have we seen that here in Story County at all?
Well, we have the kids that have the disease exemptions, and now they want to use something about that. They just choose to have the exemption and shots. There's an occasion where we have a parent and like, we have sequence that will encourage them or that's very tries to choose to skip this for this time. We try to educate. Mm-hmm. Vaccinations. Story County is very high. I think
above 95%. That's actually data from the MMWR.
Yeah. And my department needs, I think, last year, won the vaccination rate.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, so just to let you know, there are two reasons from the state that you can get a waiver from the state. Is one is for a medical reason, and the other is for a religious reason, but there's not a personal exemption reason in the state. But the religious exemption is pretty easy to get.
It's pretty much personal.
It just has to be
That's for children only, right?
What?
I mean, it has to be yeah.
I'm just looking for the research digest answer to this, but when you see autism and vaccination, that's tied to one another.
Well,
is there any medical traction there?
In school.
No, no,
just in school.
No,
there's no science.
It actually
okay.
Chris and I made that claim last week, medical license. The original person that made that claim.
Last week,
medical
license. Correct. Oh,
Vanscott. Yeah. That is good. One of those urban legends, you know, that's from extraction, and that's to our as a society identity.
Well, there's people that have social media, the ACIP has their yearly meeting for their government to choose innovations for the individuals and people on our end, that's all against the vaccine, the anti-vaccine, it's really liberal.
Keep encouraging. You know, 180 children died in the country last year from influenza, and the greatest majority were not vaccinated. So everyone really feels that there is some protective thing. I'm so amazed at people who don't vaccinate their kids for influenza. So. No. No. That's exactly right.
I know we'll get elderly people that have polio. And the teacher is always like, you should talk to these parents that don't want to vaccinate children with polio. You know, all these people that have the results of polio. And now we have vaccines that help prevent it and give it to the children.
When we were given the oral polio virus vaccine back in those days, then there was a small risk of getting polio from it. I remember I was in one of those situations where there was a mother, a young mother, and a grandmother. So the mother didn't want to give it because the child could possibly get polio. And the grandmother looked at me and go, so if you get the vaccine, there's a better chance that they won't get polio? I said, absolutely. And she just turned to her daughter and go, you give her that vaccine. So, yep. But unfortunately, we're not seeing those diseases anymore. So that's why people are not doing it. We can talk on and on about this, and this is the oral, right? What? No, we give an injection. Because you can't get polio from the injected vaccine because we have no wild case of polio in this country.
And for rotary, we're still giving the oral.
Right, because that gives passive immunity to other kids. So even if you don't get the vaccine, you will still get vaccinated. So it works well where you still see wild polio. So. They're close. They're close. Pretty soon it's going to be eradicated.
Really close.
Very close. Anyway, yeah. So. Hey.
Well, appreciate the quiet. Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. Exactly what you do. Keep
going. Thank you.
All right. That happens.
Thank you very much. Okay? All right. Okay. Denise Denton. Also, I say to do, I also would like to thank you again for being patient with us.
Oh, that's the most good meeting I go to. You've already received a report from the mentoring people, but she updated something and she wanted me to bring you an update. So, Ann Denison, for Intel Services, Andy Mercy. And so, just to give you a quick update, we sent you the October board meeting where I was sort of a month behind because we don't get the figures until sort of the first of the month, so we have October's there. And it speaks to the fact that we are doing a lot of school stuff. Because of our grant with Iowa Department of Public Health, they are requiring that we have everything that is in the contract that usually goes through December 1st has to be done through December 30th. End of December has to be done by the 1st of December. For it to count on a grant for some reason. They
process. So, gosh, we've been screwing around to get lots of project alerts done and AIMS and Beta. Hollis Maxwell, Ballard, we've been to Bowling Story Care Middle School, AIMS High. So, you know, business as usual. Within some of those schools, we have a number of youth groups, so the Mayorship Committee has been very active. They have the mayor eat for breakfast. That's something that they do annually. They call it Lunching with the Mayor. And we invite the other leadership groups in for that activity. And the mayor gets to talk to them about public service and city government, and that's always a lot of fun. And then they also work at the middle school doing bullying, and then they do another one on substance abuse and peer pressure. So I have high school and college kids who go into all the classes at the middle school and do those activities all day, and it's seven sections. It's a really long day. I don't know how the hell to do this every day. Anyway, so a couple other things. I've talked to you before about the Story County Critical Incident Response Team. I wanted you to know that they did a debriefing since I was here last. This was the fire that was in Huxley, and it involved just about every emergency management folks in the county. That there were just a lot of groups involved with that, and so it was a really large debriefing, but it was really reassuring to me that when something goes wrong in this county, people show up, and they risk their lives. It was an awful fire, and that they take their job really seriously, and that's really heartwarming to me, and good. I do not enjoy the movies, but I am so, so glad that we do them because it's a really valuable service that we need to support those people. So that is ongoing. We also interface with Iowa State Health and Wellness Program, and they have really gone from zero, having no staff, no programming, 2 years ago in February, to having really quite a large program, and they've just received a grant and hired a physician that will specifically look at suicide education prevention at the university. So we're excited about that because that's a service that's never been in place before. They came to the Story County Prevention Policy Board meeting yesterday to talk about that. So along the lines of the university, my health promotion club is working on a op-ed piece. They actually have finished it, and they will release that in January because even though you guys helped pass the vaping ordinance, evidently not everybody got the word on campus, and we've seen a little bit of vaping. I was saying I was walking out of the workroom the other day, and this kid's walking in, vaping, and I said, young man. Sort of brings out my inner cranky old person. Young man, that's not allowed on campus. He went, oh yeah, sorry. So I ran that by the Health Promotion Club, and they're wanting to take that on as a cause. So they're going to be doing some things. They want to work with the Iowa State Police to get out on campus and have to go out and get big tickets. That would be sort of fun. They want to go do that. They're also working on it and have actually just sent letters to those businesses that we know of that do ongoing compliance training with their alcohol service. So we sent a letter to particularly the Hy-Vees who have a sort of team that comes in and does compliance checks on a regular basis to keep their folks sort of on their toes. And they almost always, we check with those people, they almost always get, like 10 out of 10 checks that pass. So access is a big issue. It's not the only thing that keeps kids from drinking, but if you keep it out of your hands, that's half the battle. So we wanted to make sure we sent them a letter saying, you know, we caught you doing something right, and we want to commend you for that. And after the first of the year, I think we're going to take care of them. Lap sort of thing and make sure that they are encouraged to continue doing that and looking at how we can do that with other businesses. We sent out a letter in September to all the alcohol vendors in Ames, encouraging them to ID that we're going into the homecoming season. Another letter will probably go out this week saying it's the holidays, we just want to remind you and remind people to ID as much as possible. What else? The opioid and the Nevada Drug Task Force. So the opioid task force, Story County Opioid Task Force, did its second community conversation last week, the 15th. Oops, it's now later.
Who's in that?
It's the 15th of November.
Yeah.
It's later than I thought.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's 2 weeks ago.
We had 69 people come. I thought it was a better attendance than the first one. And what you have in front of you is the survey. We did just a half sheet survey asking people their concerns, how harmful they think it is, or what a problem it is in the community. And then we asked them for comments. And people wrote a lot this time, which is very helpful because we'll do a third community conversation in January on the 10th. You know, supply drive already, and I've given you some pocket size that you can give to your friends and family for Christmas if you choose. Announcing it for that. And so they talked on the one in November. It was two moms who had lost children. And it was, when you were there, it was very moving. I had a bunch of students there, and they were very moved by it, I guess. I can't, you know, that's not something they hear every day, and that's good for them. And so we had a lot of good feedback on that. And then in January, the program is really going to be about treatment. You know, when we say somebody should go to treatment, what does that mean? You know, so can you get people to treatment? We've invited, I think, every treatment center in Iowa to come and have a display there that night. And part of the program is going to be training people to just go meet with them. We're also going to be doing a Narcan training. And at the one in November, we did give out samples of Narcan. This is what passes for a party favor now. So we wrote a grant to buy Narcan supply to emergency management folks, but why not give it to those people, you know, some of the things that they needed. We're going to do a training with the Beta schools on how to administer Narcan. And the Beta Drug Task Force, which just started up this last year, is looking to do a program in March that will be similar to this, not just focusing entirely on opioids. Part of that program will also be how to administer Narcan or Narcan. So the flyer that you have, the blue one, is something that it talks about Narcan and encourages people to call 911. The information that, you know, the feedback that we're getting is, yeah, people think that Narcan is great, but that it will stop everything, you know. And what we know, of course, is that the opioids have sort of a 4 to 6 hour arc, and Narcan is not. So on the flip side is sort of our first white at explaining that you can't just give them Narcan, you really do need to take them to the hospital because sometimes they need 2 doses of Narcan and they may not have it. So we want to encourage people to do that. So we'll be distributing these throughout the community as well. And then last but not least, I mentioned that the Story Community Prevention Policy Board met yesterday, and that coincided with a memo that we recently received from the Iowa Department of Public Health talking about the CBD that is going to be available in theory as of January 1st, but I understand they've already opened one in Windsor Heights, so I'm not sure how that works. But to let you know, one of the reports at Prevention Policy Board, the month before, was from two of our staff who had gone to several places in the East looking for lack of a better word, paraphernalia. So we have, we have a display called Hidden in Plain Sight that we do for parents. There's a trailer that we rent from the state, but we also have one. And it's sort of a mock-up of a regular kid's bedroom, and there are all these things in there that you would think are just your average anything, but in fact, they are drug paraphernalia. So these two staff went to the Ames Smokehouse Smoke Shop to see if they could buy a couple of jewels, which is a thing that is very popular. And discovered that they are selling CBD. They're selling it in oil and edibles. Then another chef came back and said they're selling CBD at crush time in their essential oils. Under state law, they cannot do this. It is only the 5 distribution centers. So one of our staff members said, one of our board members said, why not have a certificate that says that they have permission from the state to do it, otherwise they cannot sell it, just as you would with alcohol or tobacco.
Yeah.
You
have to display it.
You have to display it, and if they do not have that, then law enforcement has license to shut that down. So we are looking, Marty, you had said at the last meeting, to bring something.
Yes.
CBD.
I'm trying to find if there's another ordinance, but the Iowa Department of Public Health in their regular memo to the agencies has encouraged agencies to look at how they can create some kind of ordinance that would do reduce access. Because it's just on the shelves.
I was, you know, George Blitzos was, and he spoke to me earlier as far as, we're the first county to say we don't allow the vaping ban. It was an easy argument to have. It was an easy vote to take. And you sit up here and you want to be an implementer, but you only have the tools that are given to you. And the thing is, you are from an agency that has firsthand knowledge in regards to the effects on people's lives. And the thing is, you get the desire to do something, but until somebody works it into the background to where it is either done in Des Moines, comes back to here, becomes a tool in the county school box, or we do something on a local level. But the thing is, you know, I couldn't encourage you as I step away and hand this off to somebody else. You need to be at the table and move past the hand-wringing phase. We can be theoretical up to the point we lose people. They adopt lifestyles that impact people that they love and themselves, and they take us all with them. And I can't say it enough, but I appreciate what you do, your passion. I have talked about you in ways that you will never hear about. And I have a file.
In a good way.
And a file of paperwork. I'm almost disappointed you brought nothing on marijuana today, because as I was cleaning my office out here, you know, as I'm staging out, I have a file that you have given us, and I was hoping of all this agenda out today, you'd give us something else, but you didn't. And that's fine too. It does not mean you're shocked. Well, I know you can't. I'm just saying, you've always been good about bringing this up.
Well, I will give you one piece of research that I read just this morning. My morning starts out with me opening up my computer and start scrolling for stuff. And it talked about the CBD oil that they use, the Epidiolex, which is used for children's epilepsy, and how it is, they're finding that it is not sustaining. So about a third of those kids who maybe have had good results in the beginning, they build a tolerance to it, and then it's not working for them, which I do find to be sad. I mean, you don't know what children suffer. But CBD oil, selling it in edibles that being smoked out is a different thing altogether. And we'll, the staff did say that they were not rushed out, but they were escorted to the door and said, oh, nothing to see here, nothing to see here, so move on. So anyway, that's a different thing. So I think in the next couple of months we will try and draft some kind of ordinance that we can bring to you. We need to make that an action item, I suppose, or how would you want to proceed to that? You know, look at it first and then the next meeting we look at.
For the idea that they have to have a certificate?
Right.
Yeah. I think if you want to draft something, and then we can look at it if you get it to us beforehand,
yes,
so we can review it, and then we can then vote on it.
I don't think it would have to be very complicated.
No,
if
it wouldn't have to be.
If they have been given a license by the state, it needs to be needs to be displayed, or they are not allowed to sell.
Yes,
because
there's
no license to the state.
Right. You should look at what the law states with liquor license, how that has to be
explained. Yeah, I think
and give it the same type of English and the same type of writing.
There's something I was told the other day. You can buy a CBD over the counter at Walgreens in a low dose form of some type. I'm not sure.
That's already out of that. Yeah.
Because
people are of you, and you can have CBD oil that has no THC in it.
Right.
But according to the state, it's still a marijuana product, so it should not be sold in Walgreens.
Right.
And you would think the corporation would be a little
careful about that. Yeah.
So it doesn't have the THC?
The THC. But by Iowa law, CBD can have as much as 3% THC. The mom's here, well, that's a really low dose. But that's pretty much what people were getting stoned on in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's not nothing. CBD does not have to have THC to activate CBD.
Right.
But that's sort of a myth that oh, you've got to have the THC with the CBD. That's part of it. There's no science to back that up. And I did give you, I think, a white paper by Kevin Smith and spoke to that.
You know how much naloxone costs? Narcan costs?
Oh, you know what? I think we were getting it for $75 for two doses.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But we're giving it away for free.
Right.
Because, you know, we did write a substantial grant of thousands, and we want to give it away.
And so does each police car, I assume, in Ames and Story County Sheriff, they have it?
We do buy all in all lots of them. Once it gets a shelf life, so we're buying some, and then...
That's good.
Yeah, so it doesn't all expire at once.
Mm-hmm.
keep trying.
You can give it intranasal too. Okay, very good.
Thank
Denise,
you.
Thank you very much.
This is nasal, yeah. That's what most of them carry.
Yeah,
that's an extra.
Okay.
I can have collected all the extras here.
Right. Well, as we end our meeting, our long meeting, this is kind of a long one, but yes, that's right. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to say a couple of words for our two people that are leaving. Kristen, I'm going to be really sorry you're leaving, and please accept this little packet we made for you, so you can remember us forever. And I really like what you did on the emergency planning, and you put a lot of people may not realize this, how much time you put in above and beyond these meetings. And a lot of times we sit on these meetings just as kind of I sit on this committee, but she actually really did an awful lot. It's a kind of a shame that you're with us, and boom takes another one. That's all. Right?
Thank you.
Marty, it's been a pleasure to work with you on this
board. Doctor.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we want to present this to you, and I really enjoyed it, and you should be very proud of what you did this time. Okay, all right, and then the final thing is my final comment that I have before I ask if anyone else has comments is I invite any of you that would like to, if you could like to go out to have a drink someplace in celebration. Okay? Seriously. Okay? On me. I'll buy the first round.
We'll take that.
Okay? All right. Okay, so any comments? Martin?
I think this time, this is one of the communities you get stuck. I have 16. You know, some of my choosing, some are just handed to you. But I got to tell you, I was a forward leader all in on these because I share your enthusiasm, I share your desires. And the thing is, this is probably going to be one of the things about, I'll have a little bit of a sting about it by giving up. But I encourage you, continue to do greatness. You have made me more informed and wiser. And I appreciate people like Denise who comes in and in the background quietly does things on behalf of the society and the world that she lives in to make it a better place. And once you know these things, you can't unknow them, you can't unsee them. And I continue to do what you continue to have done. Diane.
Thank you very much.
I was going to. I would echo that. I really enjoyed my time here. I wish I could move that Surrey County line west about 5 miles. Can't. Here we go. But I do appreciate everything. It's been great. I've learned a lot and enjoyed working with all of you. So thank you.
No, I just really appreciate it, all of your time, and Marty as well. And we're going to miss you.
No. Come over to the Happy Bottom Homestead and
okay.
Visit.
What is your resident apartment? It's just a P.O. box.
It's a P.O. box. It can work. It can work.
Move the trailer. I'm going to have a house. This is our center for decades.
Mark doesn't claim to do that.
I don't work for him.
That's Boogie.
Well, I know where she can move the trailer in the crate.
Well,
oh, dear.
I would only ask on a walk away. I would love to hear a recap of what your presentation looks like. I'm glad that is not just a Story County story because, well, it took the county and a lot of NGOs and a lot of personal, private people working in that behalf. We did the very best we could with the tools we had available. We got lucky in places I didn't think we were going to. And I'm glad that you have the opportunity to get into a forum to tell people that if you try, you might surprise yourself on what great good you can achieve. So I'd like to see or hear about it at some point. When you do that presentation next spring, you're going to have the Story County and this Board of Health. What experience are you going to have?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well then I call this meeting adjourned. All right.
Second.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right.
So where are you guys? Where's the